Hello and welcome to the Reign of Blood podcast, brought to you by the Reign of Blood Festival team. So this is the podcast where you get a behind-the-scenes look at the con and the Sharps and Bloody Kingsters all over the world who will be celebrating with us. So this podcast is intended for mature audiences who have an interest in, well, blood and Sharps-based kinks only. So if that's not you, then this podcast definitely is not for you. So these are real stories from real kinksters, and so they may contain discussions surrounding things like health, mental health, kink, blood, self-harm, traumatic experiences, and more. So if you're having a rough day or these topics could be distressing for you, then we would advise you to come back when you're more ready to enjoy the topic with us.
Hey, amazing Sharps players. I'm really excited to have you back in my dungeon to discuss some of the stuff coming up in the Reign of Blood. Tonight, I have the most amazing, sweetest Ruby all the way from Maryland. I'm really lovely to connect with this human and really grateful for their time. I'd like to welcome Ruby to my dungeon and say hi. I'm very excited that you're here.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
And we're really excited to have you on our panel. I think you're on a BIPOC panel and hopefully our Bottoms panel as well. The team seems really impressed with your first interview, and I think we had a bit of a mix up with the recording, so you very graciously agreed to re-record with me. So I'm just excited to meet new Sharps players and to chat to people that are in the same kink as me. It always makes me super happy. So before we go any further, and I really ruin the introduction, which I'm pretty good at, I can put my both feet in my mouth. It's kind of one of my talents. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about how you got started in this amazing kink journey and how you found Sharps?
Well, so I have been exploring kink for probably around like 7-ish years now, and it kind of like initially started as like a fuck around and find out and playing privately and doing a lot of DS stuff and sadomasochistic stuff, and that kind of, you know, I can gain experience and started exploring rope, and then the pandemic hit, and I think sometime in 2021 was when I technically first was introduced to needles. I had a friend who was interested in topping for it, so I let them try on me, and they did three, and I was like, no, I don't like this. I hate this. Never mind. And, beginning of last year, I got the chance to explore it with some, friends that were into it, and I grew very curious, especially when I started seeing more decorative things. And I kind of like dove in from there, and now I guess I very much enjoy mostly decorative needles, but there the little bit of sadist in me does enjoy doing stuff. But aside from that, I've become very focused on things like consent and safety and risk awareness. That's become like a big passion for me.
I love that. I think the one thing that needles has definitely shown me is how to be risk aware in how I approach kink. And it's just opened up a world of education. Like, I'm Googling stuff I never thought I would be Googling 5 years ago. So talking about being more risk aware and more safety conscious, when you are looking to play with somebody or you're looking to top, looking for a top, are there things that are important, and what are sort of your green flags in looking to play with somebody?
So my green flags is if they have a, and is this as a top or a bottom?
Whichever way, I think we probably cross-pollinate both sides. I'm a sadomasochist, so yeah, choose whichever one you prefer to discuss or discuss both.
So I guess this could be on both ends of the flash. For me, a lot of green flags are when they are able to disclose a lot of their, like, any medical or psychological, other physical things that might impact the scene. Also having very like strong boundaries. If they're like very vocal about things that they don't like, I actually really appreciate that. And it's especially if they're not like, I'm down for everything, because that for me is a bit of a red flag. So if they actually have like a taste for things that they enjoy and don't enjoy, that's a big green flag to me. If they've shown that they have done their own research before interacting with me, that's great too. I would hope they would do that, especially in the case of sharps. What else is there?
I love that you talk about the research. I think that's so important. I think when I top and when I bottom for people with sharps, like the players that I want to play with these days are the players that bring their own research to the table and say, hey, I did this. This is what I found. Hey, guys, sorry. We apparently have an arrival at the front door.
Hey.
Sorry, my flatmates just got home. The dogs are very excited to see him. Getting back to the research. I love that. I love that people bring their own stuff to the table, and it's not something that they're doing and relying on me as a top or as a bottom to do all the work. Like, I really think it's important to collab and to have your own interest in something, and also your own interest in understanding the risk, not just accepting that there is no risk. So I really like that you raised that.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's there's a lot of value in people being able to just share the workload, in the sense of just like protecting yourself, including and others, but not just relying, like just fully trusting someone else to be able to like cover all that for you. Like in the end, like the only person that's got your back is you, and you should want to protect yourself.
Yeah, somebody said to me the other day, like, how do you learn to trust somebody in kink? And I had to think about it. I hadn't really thought about that in a long time. And I think I don't think about that anymore because I trust myself. And I trust myself to do my research, and I trust myself to analyze what's going to happen. And then I share that with my partner. So, you know, it's I think trust starts with yourself first. I think especially in sharps, you've got to be quite aware of what you're doing and what's involved and how to approach it. So you spoke a little bit about not enjoying needles the first time. Was there any particular reason that you didn't enjoy needles and that you enjoyed it the second time? What was the difference?
The first time I explored needles, it was from a position as a bottom. And needles at that time scared me. And I don't think I really was like, during that time when I was asked to try it out, I was not really interested ever in it. So I think it was kind of me being a bit of like, you know, helping a friend out to get an experience. And also because I'm always like willing to try something once. So when I think the headspace was very different then, and I was not as prepared. And so that sensation for me was just like me enduring it, and like, oh, this feels like a medical examination. I don't like this. Whereas the second time, it was more like I had like a lot of time to consider it and like look things up about it, do my own research, and get more comfortable, like just mentally with the idea of it, and also approaching it as a top. And one of the other parts of that approaching it as a top is like, because I'm mostly a bottom, I like to do things to myself first because I'm new to being a top. So kind of doing that self-stab and have to do it at my own. And that helped a lot.
I love that. Self-stab for me has become quite empowering. Just being able to control what's happening to me in the situation, and then being able to create something beautiful with intent on myself. And I find it like a moment where I get to spend time with myself. I know that sounds a bit weird, but a lot of the stuff I do is like my brain is doing 100 other things, not concentrating on me. So I find self-stab for me is like really present and just in the moment and just really enjoying being with me, because I don't think I ever give myself that much time. And then I also find with the aftercare for self-stab that I'm just more aware of the fact that I need aftercare and that I need to take care of myself and that I need to, you know, be aware that my body needs some looking after. So I'm better about exercise. I'm better about treating the wounds. I'm better about sort of doing a little bit more for myself every day. So I actually spend some more time with myself. It sounds a bit odd, but I think otherwise I'm a bit like almost selfish, but in the other way, like I spend more time on other people, looking after other people, doing things for other people. So it's been quite empowering for me to do it. Is something that those stats helped you with or that you can reflect on?
Well, first off, I think that's like very beautiful. I love that. For me, I don't self-stab often because I'm kind of a baby with self-stabbing. So, like, I've half the time, especially because, like, the only areas I'm able to really aim for are either my hairline or my thighs. And my thighs are so chaotic with where the nerves are. So, when it's, like, that roulette, it gets, like, becomes a mind game for me. So, I sometimes just, like, do, like, two needles. I'm like, nope. I just give up. It is nice, like, when I've done, like, self-stab for, like, hairline needles and stuff, I have, like, felt that kind of thing where it was very much connecting with myself, and I very much enjoyed that, and it's kind of, like, a reminder that, like, that your body exists.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great reminder.
I love that. Oh, I haven't been brave enough to do my hairline. I'm quite envious. I think that takes a lot of balls. My thighs they were stupidly sore. And all I can say is, like, it was so frustrating because I went to the same thing. Like, the only place I can reach are my boobs and my thighs. And, I'm not super keen about stabbing my boobs because I've had implants. So, like stabbing them just doesn't ring hugely safe in my head. I try and avoid that. And then my thighs, I'm like, two needles, and I also used to give up. And then one day I just sat down and did my low bass with a bunch of 18 gauges, and I was like, I can do this. And you just commit to it and do it. And I did it, and it was like by needle number 10, it was amazing. It was just incredible, and I was so proud of finishing it. It was really like a bucket list thing for me, because as a top, I'd probably done 10 low basses basics for a whole bunch of other people, but I just felt like before I could ask somebody to do a low bass basic on me, like I really needed to have the balls to do it to myself. And it was super empowering, and I have to tell you, like, after needle number 10, it was much better. So I definitely think there's like a time between the first stab and the endorphin release, and I think it's between 7 and 15 minutes. So, like, my advice is maybe put a pain button in and just let it ride for a while and then try and carry on, because the first two are the worst. And then they get it really changes. The sensation changes after about 10 needles. But yeah, I wasn't the bravest with my thighs either. It took a few years for me to get there. I did 100 low basses on other people, but never was brave enough to do my own. So eventually, I was brave enough, and I get your frustration about not being able to reach other parts of my body. I can reach my feet, my head, and my thighs. I'm terrified to do my feet. Like, I haven't got brave enough to do that yet. And my face, I'm always restarting with the face needles. I'm still on the research stage. I have huge respect for that. How did they feel? What was the experience like?
So something I learned about my particular forehead, I guess, is that this is what I've been told by other people and what I kind of experienced for myself with the hairline. There's not a shape lot of nerves there, in a sense where it's like a lot of like resistance, as it's going in. It's kind of, I don't know why it's easier for me to endure than my fleshy thighs, but it is. Once they're in, it feels like a dull headache, interestingly enough. But I actually enjoy it. Maybe that's just because I'm a bit of a masochist. But for some reason, yeah, doing the hairline for me, because I guess that skin is so taut and like against the skull, it's so much easier for me to do that. Even though there is like a little bit of a challenge because my hairline is so taut that like the needles kind of struggle to go through sometimes with the, you know, the skull in the way. Has presented an interesting challenge.
I love that. I think that the feeling blood on my face was one of the most interesting experiences I've had. So I really look forward to the day where I'm brave enough to try that. I'm working on it. I'm getting there. I will tag you when I eventually grow a pair of balls and get as brave as that. So do you have a memorable experience with needles that sort of outshines the rest and that sort of sticks in your mind?
So I guess this one would be kind of a combination of needles and blood cupping. So last year I went to my first fusion event, which is a event in the US, where we go to the next site. Everyone just like does all the depravity and all the scenes that they wish they wanted to do, like that they can't really do at home. And you know, connect with other kinksters. It's really great. But they had a blood play party one night, and I got to nab a table with a couple friends, and we did some blood cupping while I was sitting up. And on the front, I also did some needles in the collarbone and hairline. And the goal was essentially just maybe like bleed so I can roll in my own blood. And that was it was a lot of fun connecting in that way. And pretty much being like finger painted in my own blood. And I let photos from it, and I was just like so giddy and happy while I was just covered in blood. And it was a great way to connect with one of my friends. So I very much enjoyed it. And I hold that memory.
I love that. I always feel like the blood is such a beautiful release for me. And there's so much freedom in us. It's totally different to, I've only done big blood plays with a needle paddle. So I'd love to try blood cupping. I'm going to need to find a top who can do that. My community's a bit limited with stuff like that. So, I have never even seen it live. I've only seen some pictures of it. But I can imagine it would be quite a freeing experience as well, and there would be quite an intense release. So, yeah, that sounds amazing. I haven't actually spoken to anybody about this intimately about blood cupping. So, you're my first. I feel a bit excited.
Yeah, I love blood cupping. I don't do it often. I technically like kind of like that was my first time being like. Doing a full scene look thing. A lot of that was like leading up to it. I was topping from the bottom, trying to like do all the research and explain how to do the cuts on my own body while I couldn't see on my back. So that was a very interesting challenge. But I ended up doing a lot of my research on like, since yeah, there's not a lot of stuff out there for like blood cupping as a kink too much, but I so I ended up relying on a lot of like traditional medicine videos and kind of like and articles reading off of those and learning a technique off that, which you know, I think everyone should do their own kind of research. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it my way, but it was very interesting trying to get to that point, and I want to explore it more, but you know, again, it's blood, so I probably do it very specific.
So just talking about that type of play and the sort of sharps play, there's obviously a different type of setup involved. Is there certain procedures that you like to go through before you start a scene? Are there things that are important to you? Maybe you could share some of those with me.
Yeah, so generally since I taught most of the time, I like to make sure that like me and the person that's auditing for me are both like well fed, or that we, you know, are bathroom breaks and everything like that. And I like them to be mentally prepared depending on what we're doing. That sometimes it's been me helping like demo something, or it's been like a big artistic project, and I, you know, want to give my bottom all the time to get get that, like, into that mental headspace beforehand and just get really comfortable.
Yeah. Nice. That mental headspace, yeah, it's, I think in the first couple of times, like, I have this, like, flashback to when I first did my first couple of needles as a bottom. I'm also a top a lot, and most of my needles are CBT needles, so, like, it's a complete reversal of roles to be a bottom who can't see her back being pierced. Like, it, there was, like, a lot of anxiety in my first couple of sessions, and I was really bossy from the bottom, like, I related to you being a bit bossy with the blood cupping. Like, I had a smile when you said that, because I'm super helpful at the bottom. Even if my top's not really asking for the help, I'm pretty free at offering it. They've managed to, my switchy sisters managed to control me a bit more by blindfolding me, and it puts me into, like, a really nice quiet space, and I'm much less controlling and a much better behaved bottom. But I really like pain. Like, the sadomasochism thing in kink for me is, I'll do pain anyway, whether it's as a top or a bottom. As long as I'm involved with it, I'm happy. Like, it doesn't have to specifically be one or the other, but I'm much easier to control if I'm blindfolded, as a bottom. Yeah. So, from a safety point of view, are there certain things that you look for in a setup, both as a top and as a bottom?
For my own personal setup, I guess I like to just, like, I have a huge bag. I like to just keep all my supplies in. It's like, as much as I can, like, have, like, a good stock on everything, and always have, like, extra chucks around, and I always want to make sure that I have, like, two things of gloves, so that if I, like, accidentally run out of one, I don't run out. So I guess that's, again, once again, like, just being stocked up. And as far as, like, bottom, like, most of the times, I, like, only top for, like, a specific people. Because, again, I'm new, so I don't want to, like, just go topping everybody willy-nilly. So I have a specific friend, and she kind of, like, switches. So she also always brings her own supplies, too, just in case, which I always appreciate. I think that's fantastic. Especially because, like, also if she, like, feels more comfortable using her own stuff, we can do that instead of me using mine. And, you know, I have the... But, like, surface cleaner, skin cleaner, things like that. I keep, like, a... Since I upgraded my bag, it's bigger now. I can have a tray with me, which I found to be extremely helpful, because, like, one of the biggest struggles I had, like, in play spaces was, like, trying to find surfaces set up that worked. You know, like, it is the part
I
need.
I love that tray thing. I've got to the stage where I have three trays. I have a green in tray, a yellow busy tray, and a red contaminated tray. So things have a setup, and then as they use, they have to go to different colored trays. So you're starting to understand why as a bottom I'm a bit bossy. Because as a top, I like this, like, super organized process. And my three trays, and nothing was touched from the three trays, and nothing, anything on the green tray can't go back on the green tray. But that process, like, helps me feel prepared for the scene. So I'm very glad that my friends put up with my with my OCD. I think that I should be more appreciative of my friends listening to myself self talk about my overpreparedness sometimes. I think I also have two boxes of gloves and about 25 paper towels. I love to have my own paper towel. I don't like to use anybody else's paper towel. I like to know where my paper towel's been. Like, those things are super important to me. If you want to make me happy, you know, lots of paper towels for my birthday is a great gift. Weird stuff like that. Ritu, your scenes sound really like enjoyable and happy. What words would you use to describe your needle scenes? Give me three and maybe tell me why you would choose them.
I guess three words. I'd say, I guess first off is creative, because I do a lot of decorative stuff. So I end up making my own stencils in that way. So that's been a fun challenge, trying to like come up with stencils that aren't. It's been a fun challenge trying to come up with stencils that aren't too small and too many, because like I did a circle last time and it was like really cool looking, but it was so close together that it just came one giant pain button from my bottom. And I was like, all right, well, I'll learn to adjust that. And then two other words, I guess attentive and maybe chaotic. As far as attentive goes, I would say, I've been told that I'm very like kind with needles, because again, like since I mostly focus on decorative stuff, I don't really intend to like do any of like the fun sadistic stuff most of the time. And especially when I'm like demoing for someone who, like, I've been raised with like friends who have like a fear of needles, and they felt safe enough with me to want to challenge themselves in that way. So I'm usually very gentle and quick and procedural in that way. I also like am very reassuring most of the times throughout the scene. I'm like, if they seem like they're being a little bit more challenged than they should be, I'll be like, all right, like, you might take like a break for like a few minutes or something, and like I'll like wait patiently for them, and I'll be like, just let me know when you're ready, we can get back into it, and let them kind of like get back into that space, and then we'll resume. So I guess it's a little bit like service talky sometimes of how I handle things, which is where the attentiveness comes in. As for chaotic, well, since again, I really only do needles with like a few people, and a lot of them are very close to me. Specifically one of them, when I do needles with them, like we have a kind of like a sibling dynamic, and sometimes I will just, you know, we'll be like really goofy, and it'll be really like lighthearted, even if the, like, we're doing a shitload of needles, we'll still just be like laughing most of that time. And sometimes just every once in a while, just randomly do a really like mean thing, like a little twist, and they'll just be like, oh, because again, that's like something that we like kind of built trust upon doing with each other. But yeah, I guess that's those are my three words, creative, attentive.
I love that, and I loved listening to your voice. You sounded so happy telling me about your scene and about the little twist, like you could hear the joy. It was really cool to share that moment with you. Thank you. It felt very authentic, and yeah, super fun. My needles also feel like that. Even when we're doing hectic pain stuff, like there's enormous joy for some reason in sharps. Like even when it's super painful, we're still giggling and laughing. So it's lovely to hear that other people also experience that. I think I relate to your like a little bit of service chopping. I think in the beginning when I started with sharps, it was very much service chopping. And only sort of further on in my journey when I found a player that was really after the pain. It was interesting, my CBT bottom and I spent a lot of time almost vetting each other in the process when we started off, like just doing little pieces, and they were very decorative and they weren't very dramatic or very damaging, and they, you know, it was just getting to know each other, getting to know how accountable we were, just creating a bit of a relationship. And then managed to get sort of a year down the line and start really exploring pain together sometimes people say things and I don't always believe them. So I needed to sort of really believe that it was actually the intense pain he was after. And after sort of a year, I started to trust that. And then we really started playing with the pain. And it was a turning point in my needles for me. It just became like a whole different version. And then just not trying to focus so much on how I put them in, but then focusing on how much pain I could cause once they were either in or while I was putting them in. So yeah, I definitely relate to the service topping bit. But I think the journey, once you have the skill and you start to trust your skill, you're able to expand and explore more. So I like to hear that people are conscientious about starting off and just reaching a level where they're really confident in their topping for the basics before they start exploring hectic shit, but I will tell you that the pain side of needles is incredible. Like, you can do so much stuff with them. You can really turn them into, hot, spicy. You can put a vibrator over them. There's a whole lot of stuff you can do with needles that is just quite epic. So I do suggest that you take a vibrator to the next session. When the needles are all in, just gently run the vibrator up and down over the needles. It feels frigging awesome. So yeah, you can really maybe not the vibrator that's in the bedroom drawer. Mine's not my button. We get in this country, we have these Chinese shops, and they're great. You can buy everything from like a surf to like a, I don't know, pair of shorts, pair of slops, a lock for the front door, and they sell these facial guns, these facial massage guns, and they're like, it literally looks like a giant weapon, and it's got a giant round ball on it, like a big soft ball on it, and we use those, and they're fantastic. I think they vibrated like 50 times what a normal vibrator vibrates at. They're cheap as chips. And we use those over the needles. They're amazing. They're really incredible. My CBT guy doesn't think they're as amazing. I quite enjoy using them. He doesn't quite enjoy it as much during the CBT. But I think it's quite fun. But on normal needles, if you're doing a decorative piece, just rubbing them up and down over the decorative piece is really quite an incredible feeling. It's like a spicy vibrate, and the whole back and skin vibrates. It's really super interesting. And not super sore, but shoots like almost like little pain buttons, but all together in one go. I don't know how else to describe it. You have to try it and then tell me what you think.
Yes. I didn't even consider something like that. So that's definitely something I'm like, oh, like, okay, like, I'm thinking new to explore. All right.
I wrap the end of the vibrator in a glove, so that it's covered, so that we're not infecting the needle sites, and that just keeps them clean. And I obviously don't go on the ends of the needles. I just go over the hubs or over the skin, the pierced skin. It's super fun. Oh. we've done some crazy things. I have a four sign sister. Needles aren't particularly sexual for me as a kink. So we just have these four signs days where we test ridiculous things like, what happens if you put a high pressure hose over the picture of needles on your leg and stuff like that? Yeah. Going forward, if you can give our listeners a little bit of advice about starting off in a needle journey, what would that advice be? And would you be able to share some of them?
Sure. I think about this earlier, just do a lot of your own research into needles and stuff. There's a lot of great needle sharps books out there, especially I felt like that provided like their own research, and that is a good start. Or don't just dive in head first. It's okay to go slow. I guess this is how my journey has been as a top and a switch. I guess it's really, I don't do a shitload of scenes, and I don't do it with a bunch of people. And I feel very comfortable that way because it's been helpful with building my confidence and making sure that I'm doing things as risk aware and careful as I can be. What does it say, slow and steady wins a race. There's no race. So you keep just going slow and steady. And just like if you're drawing a line, the slower you go, the better that line will look, the less sloppy you'll be. Take your time. Needles aren't going anywhere, people aren't going anywhere, so it's great to, especially something like sharps and stuff like that, to kind of be considerate and mindful and intentional.
I love that, Ruby. I know we love chatting to you this afternoon, and I really thank you for your time, and it always puts such a smile on my face to connect with sharps players across the ocean and know that there are more of us out there, and really grateful for you being here this afternoon morning. I don't think it's afternoon yet in Maryland, but I wish you the best for the rest of your Friday, and just a huge big thank you.
Yeah. Thank you again for having me. This has been fantastic. It was great talking.
Thanks, Ruth. It was really great to connect. And for all of you who don't have a ticket for Rain of Blood, please do get your tickets sorted out. We are very excited to launch our on-demand classes from the 1st of April. So we'll have a whole bunch of resources like Needles 101, needlestick capacity, negotiation, consent, a whole bunch of stuff like that available on the on-demand resource, which will be on our website. And then our convention will be at the end of April, 3 days of the most amazing Sharps players, and just some bucket list stuff that you don't get to see from people that are literally legends in the Sharps community. And it's an absolute privilege to host them. We also have four panels in April, so you get to hear some feedback and some authentic stories from the guys who are actually involved in Sharps. And those are accessible to anyone who wants to come and have a listen. I'm very excited to have Ruby on these panels with us. So if you haven't got your ticket, get your ticket. Otherwise, lots of love and kitten kisses from me in South Africa.
10, 9,